I think we'd all would have to agree that life is pretty good. Would you say that? I think there's always something in us that always kind of wants us to be alive and experience things. When you think about the things that we have in this life, you know, we have taste buds, so food kind of tastes good, and we have possessions, and we have goals, and we have accomplishments, the things we're able to do, the things we're able to build and make, and so on and so forth. And then we have the relationships. Aren't the relationships in life really neat? What's neat about human relationships and families and grandchildren and cousins and so on and so forth is whatever your status is, whatever your intelligence is, whatever your income is, you have those relationships, right? And that can be something that infuses life, empowers life, right? So basically, what do we want to do with life? We want to stay around, right? But the reality that waits for all of us out there is death. At some point in time, every single one of us will die. And look at what Hebrews 2 verses 14 and 15 say about that. In terms of what Jesus came to relieve us from. It says, since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in the humanity so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. And if you really think about life and how death relates to that, you almost can't help living your life with that in the backdrop to say, at some point in time, it's coming. Like, it could come for any of us. I don't care how old you are. You're a teenager. You could die tomorrow. You get hit by a bus, get a disease, whatever. What's funny is that as you get older and the reality of death comes in, now all of a sudden we start thinking of it more. Worrying, oh, wait a minute, I'm 70, I'm 80, I'm 60, I'm, whoa, wait a minute. All our lives is that fear of death. One reason, the only reason, the primary reason that Jesus came is to free us from that. And that we celebrate this day in terms of all that he accomplished to basically free us from that fear of death, to know that he has power to make us alive, that he has power to raise us in terms of us being raised to newness of life, even in our lives here and for eternity. And so if you can, turn your Bibles to John chapter 11. We're going to be talking about the raising of Lazarus and the power beyond compare. Jesus resolving the very thing that no one can resolve. Well, we can come up with medicine and exercise and food and nutrition to help us manage death, but we can never erase it. Jesus is telling us today that he is the one that can erase it in our lives. And so basically in John chapter 11, kind of setting the scene in terms of the different players and the events that will unfold, it says here, now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and his sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. And so again, in this first verse is again talking about the players, talking about the people. It is interesting that John is communicating this way that we would know Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. Jesus has interacted with them in the past. Remember, Martha was the one that was all busy and Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus. And, you know, hey, Jesus, tell my sister, come help me clean the kitchen. And Jesus, no, she has done the more necessary thing in just worshiping and learning from the Savior. And so not only do we have the participants, but just the knowledge of how great it is to have Jesus as a friend. Just imagine, like outside of his disciples, outside of his close circle of his friends, Jesus just made connection to people. That he'd had friends, he had relationships besides just the apostles. And so therefore, again, a great thing to have Jesus as a friend. To have the one who is powerful. To have the one that has overcome everything. As you read the gospel, something you would be struck by is there's nothing Jesus can't do. He can heal people. He can raise people from the dead. He can calm the storm. He can feed 5,000 people. And so again, if there's anyone that you would want to be a friend, it's Jesus, to be able to send a letter off, to send a notice off, to say, hey, Lazarus is sick. Can you come and help? But look at Jesus' response here. When he heard this in verse 4, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. nor is it, no, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus, yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And so in this statement, I think Jesus presents to us a very important principle for life. One of the privileges that we have as believers in Jesus Christ, and so there it will be on the slide because I can't remember what I've said. It says, how good is it to perceive life in the beginning of a situation from the vantage point of the end of the matter? Let that sink in. How good is it to perceive life in the beginning of a situation from the vantage point of the end of the matter? Isn't that what Jesus is doing here? Isn't what he's ultimately encouraging of his apostles to think in terms of, Lazarus will not die? Well, actually, Jesus, he will. He'll be in the grave 4 days, in fact. But from the perspective of truth, from the perspective of heaven, from the perspective of God's ideas, he will not die. This is not the true. This is not the end of the story, if you will. And the great truth of being related to God through Jesus Christ is that is something that defines our lives. That we work from the viewpoint of victory. We work through the viewpoint of success. We work from the viewpoint of God's glory. Just think about what that might mean in terms of you, say, for instance, dealing with sin. You know, in terms of recognizing the things that tempt you and that trouble you and the things that draw you in to those things that you know God would not want you to do. I mean, to recognize that God already has given you victory. You are already successful, if you will, in terms of God's viewpoint. Just imagine, I mean, let's take an alcoholic. Okay, an alcoholic in the throes of alcohol, drinking, all the things that are troubling his life, and we know that 4 years later, he's going to be free. He's not going to drink. It's not going to be a problem anymore. Well, how powerful would it be for him to live in this moment from the viewpoint of that victory? Like, in other words, I can claim the victory that's happening in the future to generate power in the present. I mean, ultimately, that is what Jesus is telling them. Okay, like, the reality is Lazarus is going to die, but I want you to have hope now. That again, you do not make choices in victory that establish the victory, but rather it reinforces it. It proclaims it. It declares it. See, by I think the nature of faith and hope is based in that. Again, the ability we have to see from the situation that is beginning, see it from the vantage point of the future. You know, what we can always know is God is always seeking to work things out according to his will. He's always working in that direction. He's always seeking to be glorified in the context of the things that we're going through. And so again, to glean that, to have that be the thing that is driving and enabling and empowering you. Again, you're not working to establish victory. You're working because you already have victory. I mean, think about it in the context of relationships or irreconciliation, to realize that God is working to reconcile that relationship. God is working to bring that play to fulfillment. Just think about seeing that from the end of the situation rather than the beginning. The end in terms of what God's plan would be, what his purposes would be. And so therefore, you live and you act in that way that reinforces what God wants. See, when we recognize what God is going to establish in the future, what God asks us to do is live in a way that's consistent with it. But again, as we live in the way that's consistent to it, we're not establishing it. We're just living in the context of that. It's just an amazing statement that I see here in terms of what Jesus is saying about the death of Lazarus. This sickness will not then end in death. No, it's for God's glory that God's Son may be glorified through it. And so basically, Jesus is ultimately going to make the sisters wait so his glory can be enhanced, so his glory can be reinforced. You know, they are waiting 2 days. Maybe you might be waiting 3 months. Maybe you might be waiting 6 months in terms of, again, looking at the present situation from the context of the viewpoint of God's work, God's glory, well, what he's accomplishing. And just make sure that doesn't cause you not to engage with what your responsibility would be to foster that glory. See, to know, again, God always, there's ultimately a future hope for all of us. I mean, heaven is the future hope. I mean, well, whatever we're dealing with in this life, we can say, I can work for the vantage point of one day I will be in heaven. One day all of this will be gone. All of this won't matter. All the struggles of relationship and sickness and difficulties and challenges that we face in the world, like things that don't work out well. I'm trying to get the raise. I'm trying to get the work done. I'm trying to manage the people, and it's just not working. I'm so frustrated. Well, guess what? Someday you won't experience that. And so what God welcomes you to do is look from that viewpoint of eternity, look at that viewpoint of God's glory or God's purposes in the situation, and let that infuse the situation here. See, in some ways, to me, if this wasn't important, why would Jesus say it? Like, if he didn't want the disciples to understand something, for us to understand something, he knows what's going to happen. He knows that he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. Now, Lazarus is going to be dead. The sisters are going to mourn. They're going to go through a process of sadness. But Jesus knows that this is not going to... Like, again, I want to point you to a future hope. I want to point you to a future aspect of God's work and what he's going to be what he is accomplishing. You know, if anything else, what the statement does is waking us up to that. That, again, anything that we're doing is just joining God in what he's fostering and what he's doing that eventually is part of the victory that he has, the completion that he has, the wholeness that he has, the health that he has. But again, we're not establishing it in our efforts. We're participating with God in what he has already accomplished. You know, if I can just use an analogy of my life, that, you know, I was married fairly late. You know, I got out of college and I'm 23 and I'm thinking I'm ready to be married. And I want to have a wife and get kids and blah, 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 blah. Well, I eventually got married when I was like 28, 29. And I tell you, some of those years were some of the hardest years of my life in terms of being single and where's the person, who is she? And, you know, every girl that walks by in church, is she the one? Is she the one? Is she? and but then once you're married, how much did that speak to the fact that now that doesn't matter? Like, again, the problem is we don't know what the future is going to be. We don't know how God's going to solve, but ultimately in God's economy, he would say, be still and know that I'm God. But if you can understand that aspect of, if I could know that at 28, 29, this wonderful woman, see, basically, I was ready. Karen wasn't. And so that's the story we tell in relation to that. That basically, if I had known that, how different would that be? 25 being single, it wouldn't be a big deal because I know later. See, that is the benefit we have as believers. God is working. God is moving. God is shaking. He's always trying to bring things to health and wholeness, and we just need to join him and still be encouraged, still be built up, still believe, still have hope, have a confident assurance in terms of what he is doing. I just love the way the Bible talks about this in terms of just, you know, Jesus' statement and now his action here. Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Like Jesus, you know, Lazarus is sick, you know. Like you just imagine the apostles, Jesus, okay, we're sitting, we're having breakfast, we're having dinner, we're having a teaching, we're having a Bible study. Jesus, you realize you got that message from Mary and Martha. Lazarus is sick. No, just not time. For 2 days he waits. I mean, it is important to recognize that Jesus cares about people. Like when he says that, you know, like before he expresses something about that action, it says in verse 5, Jesus loved Martha and his sister Lazarus. He is not being insensitive. He is not being cavalier, but his action does cause us to ask a couple questions. I mean, the first question is, does God have a right to make you wait to accomplish something greater? Does God have a right to make you wait to accomplish something greater? Because ultimately, what Jesus wants to do with Lazarus is not heal him. He doesn't want to fix the disease. He's done that before. He does want something that is of a greater glory. I think it is even on the cusp of the work that he will be doing. I think it's, in many ways, this raising of Lazarus was for the apostles. You know something? I know that literally weeks from this, I am going to die. I'm going to be handed over. The apostles are really going to struggle with that. They're all going to run away. They're not going to know what's up. But to realize that when I tell you, and I am going to be raised on the third day, let me give you an object lesson. Let me give you this raising that I do so that you will have that as a basis of faith, as a basis of encouragement, to give you hope, to give you confidence. So again, when Jesus dies, it's not the end of the world, because I know that he's going to be raised on Sunday. Like, I don't have to be that sad. I don't think we ever have to be that sad about the things of the earth, because again, there's a future glory, there's a future purpose, there's something God's doing in the situation that gives me hope. But ultimately, does God have the right to make you wait? You know, patience is not something we do well. Waiting is not something we do well. If there's anything that God is, that is part of God's economy, is helping us understand that waiting is better. Like not giving into that instant gratification. The world is certainly pushing us that way in terms of things happening so quick. Like I have a thought, I have a desire, boom, let me click the button and get that delivered tomorrow. Well, let me put that food in the microwave and it's done now. You know what that does? It fills our world with activity. Like it fills our world with busyness. You know, if there's anything that the Christian life is intended to be, our relationship with, is a life of reflection, a life of pause, a life of waiting, a life of searching, a life of engaging with God in meditation and such to say, hey, God, you know, how do I need to know you more? How do I work for you more? How do I fulfill your purposes more? And so therefore, God, Jesus here, you know, makes this great statement of, or this great statement is in his inaction, that you have to wait. The answer's coming, but you have to wait. And the second question is, are you willing to be patient? Are you willing to be the person that, you know something? Be still and know that I'm God. You know, I think the Christian life is intended to be filled with hope and joy and peace. This is a hope, a joy, and a peace that overcomes everything. Depression, anger, anxiety, fear, hope, joy, and peace. But it's all in relationship with him. It's all in the knowledge of him. See, because it's all, see, that fear, that anxiety, that depression, that anger comes in waiting, doesn't it? Like we're not getting something we want, so I'm mad about that. Things aren't working out the way I should. I'm sad about that. I'm not what I'm supposed to be. I'm sad. All these things, it's about the waiting. And us vetting out in our emotions, the waiting. Well, God is saying there's a purpose for the waiting. My glory is in the waiting. Faith is in the waiting. Hope is in the waiting. But I am always working. Again, I always have that end goal. I know where this is going to, but I'm not necessarily going to tell you what it is. But are you willing to believe? See, that's a big aspect of the Christian life in terms of just God making us wait and us developing that patience in the presence of it. And so we're going to work through the verses now. There's a lot to get through in terms of this passage, so I won't make as many points as I could in terms of the verses that are here, because we do need to get to the end. So it says here in verse 7, then he said to his disciples, let us go back to Judea. But Rabbi, they said, a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you're going back there? That seems strange to them. Well, wait a minute, Jesus. You were threatened with death. You're going to go back into that? Yeah, well, Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light. So again, just a general encouragement to walk in the light of God's truth, the light of God's power, not in the darkness, not fleeing from him, not being disobedient, but doing the things that he wants us to do. And that's where safety, that's where predictability is. And then in verse 11, after he said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up. You know, Jesus is clearly speaking an analogy, but the disciples don't get it. I mean, ultimately, sometimes, let's admit it, sometimes it is a work of God to get us out of bed. Okay, I mean, but clearly that's not what, the alarm's going off for Lazarus, and I have to go and wake him up. He's hitting the snooze button too much. That's not what Jesus is talking about. But again, what? Well, if he's sleeping, good. That means he's going to get well. That's what the disciples say next. His disciples replied, Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get better. Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples, though he meant, thought he meant natural sleep, just not getting it. As again, it's not part of their conception. It's not part of their ideas. Martha actually is going to affirm belief in a statement Jesus makes, and then her actions are not, she doesn't even, like, she really doesn't believe what she's saying on some level in terms of how it applies to Lazarus, but I guess we'll get to that. But again, Jesus is encouraging this understanding, and the disciples aren't getting it. That's not new for them. And so then it says in verse 14, it just speaks plainly. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I'm glad I was not here, so that you may believe, but let us go to him. Then Thomas, called Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, let us go also go, then we may die with him. This could be a statement from doubting Thomas of courage. Like, okay, if this is where you're leading us and this means we're dying, well, let's go. I'm on board. Verse 17, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him by, but Mary stayed home. And so Jesus had to realize, like, grief, mourning, well, probably it still is a big thing for the Jewish people, certainly back then. A 7-day process in terms of people coming around and mourning. Like, even protocol will call for even a poor family to have 2 flutists and a professional mourner at someone's grieving their passing, in the 7-day process of grieving their passing. So again, a big thing. We do believe that Mary, Martha, and Lazarus had means. So just imagine the scene here. That again, all these people are here, and they're mourning, and they're wailing, and they're expressing their grief. They're processing their emotion about their sadness about Lazarus. I mean, this thing about how humorous it is, even though Jesus is not laughing, we're going to see. But in some ways, like, he knows. He knows what's going to happen. But he's not ready to do it. He's not ready to take the step. You know, again, part of that waiting is, Jesus, when are you going to take the step? When are we going to move forward? When are you going to bring the resolution to this matter? But I'm still thinking from the viewpoint of the resolution as I'm walking through the process. So again, all this is happening. And so verse 21, this is a refrain that happens consistently through the passage. Jesus, if you were here, he wouldn't have died. Verse 21, Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died, but I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. I don't think she is talking about resurrection, because her actions don't think that she's thinking that way. And so here Jesus makes a general statement, you know, in terms of what he knows is going to happen, but she answers in a way that is reflective of her understanding. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day. So she thinks Jesus is just giving a pleasant platitude. Okay, you know, these are, like, a lot of people have been saying this to Mary and Martha, I assure you. The Jews had the understanding that at the last day, God would raise the righteous to glory and condemn the unrighteous to, not glory, to separation from God. And to Sheol, the place of the dead. And so basically to understand that Martha hears this, and the only thing she can conceptualize, the only thing she can imagine that Jesus is saying is, hey, yeah, he is going to rise in you know, when the end comes. No, that's not what Jesus is saying. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Let me read that again. I am the resurrection and the life. Just think about the context that Jesus is making that statement in. Again, someone has died, someone that's dear to him, that's dear to the sister, people are mourning, and he says, I am the resurrection and the life. I'm not talking about a future resurrection. I'm not talking about something that God will accomplish at a future time. I'm talking about what I'm doing now. This is who I am right now. Then the presence of death, in the presence of mourning, I am the resurrection and the life. In our fear of death and the things we wonder about, or when is it going to happen? I am the resurrection and the life, Jesus says. He who believes in me will live even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. I mean, what an incredible statement this is. It's actually one of many that Jesus says that are his great I am statements. I am the door, I am the bread of life, I'm the fount of living water, I am the good shepherd, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So again, this is another one in terms of I am the resurrection and the life. I mean, it solves our greatest problem, doesn't it? In other words, if we're kept all our lives in fear of death, if what is waiting outside for us in terms of, okay, I'm enjoying things, I'm liking this, I like my family, I like my possessions, I like my work, I like what's happened, I like that vacation, but wait a minute, what if I die? What if I never get to walk my children down the aisle? I'm not saying lightly about anything. You know, Jesus doesn't take what's happening here lightly. He's going to cry. But and yet, it solves our greatest problem. The thing we can't manage, we can't fix, we can't come up with a solution. It'll never happen. All of us will die, but the hope God wants us to have is that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. I like the fact that Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. It's not that he only provides resurrection and life, but he is the resurrection and the life. That he doesn't just have it to give out. It is him is the resurrection and the life. You know, when you think about, you know, you're sending a gift to someone. You know, and you send a gift to someone far away. It's their birthday, it's Christmas, maybe Easter, you know. You send gifts away. And well, what if you wrote someone and said, I am the gift? That's a little different, right? It's not I'm giving a gift. I am the gift. So therefore, how do we get resurrection and life? It's not Jesus, I pray to you, give me resurrection and life. That's not what it is. It's engaging with him. It's believing in him. It's embracing him. You want resurrection and life? The only place you're going to get it is through Jesus Christ. He is the only one throughout human history that even has the capacity to say this, to do things that would commensurate with it, to validate the truth of it, that we could believe that 2,000 years later in a suspicious and guarded and doubtful time to say, yes, he is who he claimed to be. Yes, he is the resurrection of life. Yes, I do believe and I am built up, but I am encouraged that it answers that thing I can't solve. But again, it's through him. Somebody says, well, how do we get it? I love that Jesus says, and now if you give me enough money, you can have it. You're doing enough good works, you can have it. Do you believe this? I mean, basically he said it already. He who believes in me will, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Like, it's a belief, it's faith. Again, if Jesus is this, the only way that we can get it is to engage with him. So how do I engage with someone? How do I interact with someone that was alive 2,000 years ago? It's only through faith. It's only from believing and accepting what he's claiming to be. So do you believe? There's a question that you, everyone here, should walk. Do you believe this? Do you believe that Jesus is the resurrection and the life? Again, does it address that fear of death? Does it address other fears as well? Yes, Lord, she told him, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world. Again, great affirmation of faith. She still doesn't know what's going on. I believe you're the, you are the Messiah. You are the Son of God. You have shown me that hands down. Again, all the things he has done, all the things that he expressed in terms of power over evil, driving out demons, power over nature, calming the storm, power over logistics. I was watching Jesus now. I tend to, how many else, watch like Jesus movies around Holy Week? I mean, feeding 5,000 people. We've got 5 loaves and 2 fish and feed 5. Like, how do you do it? Like, maybe I can understand. A guy's blind and I put some spit and mud and I put it on his eyes. Maybe I can get that. Okay, he's touching him. He's, there's power in his hands. You know, whatever. But feed 5,000 people? The baskets, they keep filling up. Like they do, and many of them, like, think about the logistics of feeding 5,000 people, and the baskets, they're starting to get empty, and then they're getting full of bread and fish. Like maybe you could even conceptualize, okay, a baker's in the back really working hard, but how do you get the fish? How do you get some of you go fishing, you only got 1 fish. And you still, that's a funny thing about fishing, it's still a good day. Still a good day. I didn't catch any fish, but I fished. Great. Like it's like I played baseball and I struck out every time. But it was good. Yeah, no, fishing is another. But you get the, here, fish are being created instantaneously. Talk about creative power. Talk about majesty. Yeah, I believe that. I believe you are the Son of Yeshua. But she doesn't get what he's doing here. No one gets what he's doing here. And after that, and after she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary. Martha is the commensurate host, so she's going out. Mary's the more sentimental, emotional girl, and yet she comes out, and she says the same thing. The teacher is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her notice how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. Again, that's their job. The sisters are moving. Let's mourn with them. Great aspect of community and identification there. Shouldn't be dismissive. I'm not dismissive about that. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would have not died. Remember that? When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in the spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Let me just take 45 seconds to talk about that. Because you know what this means? In the presence of all God's work, in the presence of all God's power, in the presence of God's glory, there is still legitimacy for human emotion. Like, we grieve, but not like the rest of the world that has no hope. Someone says mean things to you, you be sad for a minute. That makes sense. That's okay. Just don't be ruled by that. You know, be angry and sin not. Like, the anger is something God has given you. Express that. It's part of the healthy human reflection and processing of emotion, you know, processing of thought and sentiment in terms of how I'm feeling about things. So Jesus knows very well what's going to happen. He's going to raise Lazarus from the dead, and yet he's still crying. Talk about compassion. Talk about identification with humans. Talk about God's care for us. You know, you think about what power oftentimes does to people. Power and wealth and such oftentimes causes people to disconnect from people, that places that are uncomfortable. I live in a certain place, so I don't have to interact with those people. I have keep those people away from me. Don't they know who I am? Oftentimes, the disconnection, that's not Jesus. Jesus has all the power that could ever be imagined, and yet he is sympathetic in a very merciful and compassionate way. That's the glory of Jesus. He is the one who would say, get out of here, I'm doing a miracle, don't you understand who I am? No, let me, my friends are crying, and so I'm going to cry with them. You know, that's the reality of, again, even when we're looking at the beginning of the situation, the vantage point of the victory, yeah, you're still going to engage with human emotion. You're still going to process all that's going on. But again, you view it from the point of victory in terms of what God is accomplishing in the context and not just what you're doing. So Jesus wept. That was longer than 45 seconds. Just too important a point. But it says here, then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he open the eyes of the blind man, have kept this man from dying? There you go again. Jesus, once more, deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. Look what Martha says here. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor, for it's been there 4 days. Like Martha, at no point is she saying, oh, you know, some God's going to give you whatever you want, and I know he's dead, and if you were here, he could be sick, but you can do whatever you want, and oh, you must be ready. No, she's not thinking that. She said, okay, Jesus, you are who you are. You know, God answers you. God responds to you. But she's not thinking he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. And I think that the purpose, you know, part of what we have in the waiting, in terms of when God calls us to wait, you know, God is enhancing his glory here. God is making sure that Lazarus is good and dead. Because Jesus wants to make clear, this is not a resuscitation. That Lazarus is dead as a door nail. Dead as dead can be. He might be smelling Jesus, almost like it's almost in a lack of understanding of Jesus. But by the way, Jesus, do you know what happens with a body that's in the ground for 4 days? Like, do you know what you're asking us to do? Just think of the glory of what is happening here. All the people are there mourning someone's death. We're here about someone dying. The sister in that mode, we've lost our brother. You know, Jesus is here, so it's better, but we've still lost our brother. He's really not going to do anything to solve this. Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked at them and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he said that, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! Imagine the anticipation. Imagine, did he just say what I thought he said? Like people that are way back in the crowd. Did he say, Lazarus, come out? The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Again, it is power beyond compare. Well, what is made available to us from God, through Jesus Christ, and what God Jesus reveals here, it is power beyond compare. Again, do you want that on your side? Do you want that presence in your life? Do you want that reality to define you? The only thing that is keeping you from that is faith, is believing, is growing in knowing. But in terms of initial interaction, initial reception, it is only believing Jesus is who he claimed to be, that he did what he did, and believing on that. Again, when even the people that were closest to him didn't understand what Jesus is doing. And so just imagine the glory, imagine the faith, imagine the wonder to be there and to see someone who had died walk out of the grave. Again, do you think you'd be encouraged in faith? Do you think you would say, wow, this guy has got to be something? Well, the reason why this testimony in Scripture is there is now 2,000 years we can say and agree with every person that is there, boy, this guy's got to be something. I love what Jesus says at the end here. Take off the grave clothes and let him go. Isn't that a great reflection, a great depiction of the nature of God's transformation in our life? This man was associated with death. This man was associated with sadness. This man was identified with what is broken about the world. But I am coming and freeing him from that, that he no longer needs to be defined by that. And that is a glory for us. In many ways, Jesus comes to us and says, take off the grave clothes. Take off all those things that are of the flesh, that are of sin, that is about desperation. Again, the sadness, the anxiety, the fear, the anger, the frustration, the disappointment. Take it all and take it off. Be free. Let them go. Do you want to be a person that, again, is let go? Again, we engage with human emotion. We're crying when it's right to cry. We're mad when it's wrong. You know, we're afraid. But it doesn't control me. It doesn't define me. What defines me is I can tear those things off and live in the light of Jesus. Live in the power of Jesus. See, it's certainly significant to come to Jesus in salvation and say, yes, Jesus, as far as me being made right with God and going to heaven, I believe you're the resurrection and the life. But Jesus never intended it first for it to stop there. It would always be how every moment is transformed by the reality of what Jesus is saying here. You know, in our last slide, it's one thing to raise someone from the dead. Pretty miraculous, right? Not something everyone does. It's another thing to be raised from the dead. You know, wow. I believe this is a picture for the disciples who, when they face the death of Jesus, oh, remember what he did to Lazarus? Can we make that connection that when he said he's going to be raised, that's what that meant? It's another thing to offer resurrection to every person who believes in you. And yet that's the point, that God gives resurrection to every person who's willing to believe. And I would say, in addition to believing, think about embracing. More than just, yeah, I believe that, I know that. Let me embrace that. Let me be driven by the conviction of what that means so that all my life is affected. You know, today, like I said, is a day for communion. And what a great opportunity for us to engage with the knowledge of God, with the truth of God, and say, yes, I believe. Yes, I embrace. Yes, I want. Because again, God is offering you everything. He's waiting for you to say, yes, I want. So as we prepare for communion, let's think about that and what the significance is of taking the bread, taking the cup, and engaging with God, to remember him, to have something tactile that we're engaging with that allows us to make that statement, to reinforce that reality in our lives. And basically, if you're not in that, if it's not that for you, then feel free to let the elements pass. Because in some ways, it really just doesn't make sense. If you're not saying, yes, I want this, yes, I believe this, yes, I need this, yeah, take it. But if you don't, or you don't believe, then this it really makes, again, you just let that sit with you. So if we can have the people that are passing out the communion come forward.
Out on the perilous deep, where danger silently creeps, and storms so violently sweep, you drift in too far from the shore. Drifting too far from the shore. You're drifting too far from the shore. Come to Jesus today. Let him show you the way. You're drifting too far from the shore. Today the tempest rolls high, clouds overshadow the sky. Surely death is hovering nigh. You're drifting too far from the shore. You're drifting too far from the shore. You're drifting too far from the shore. Jesus today, let him show you the way. You're drifting too far from the shore. Why meet a terrible fate? Mercy's abundantly away. Turn back. Drifting too far from the shore. You're drifting too far from the shore. Come to Jesus today. Let him show you the way.
You know, it is interesting that the early church during communion would actually celebrate the resurrection more than the crucifixion. And so that's why it's very fitting for us to share in communion and be celebrating the resurrection, because as significant as the death of Jesus was, his resurrection is the thing that affirms all his death accomplished. So Jesus, on the night that he was betrayed, during the Passover Seder, he took bread. We learned on Thursday, this is the aphikomen, the dessert after dinner, the one that was broken and buried and bought back. And now he took this bread and he said, take this and do this in remembrance of me. Let's take the bread. And after supper, he took the cup. And he said, as often as you drink this, you'll remember me and reinforce the knowledge of my death and the knowledge of my resurrection. So let's take and let's drink. And let's just pray in our hearts with the understanding of all that it means to believe, with all it means to embrace, with all it means to follow. Father, we know that you have established for your Son all that we would need to believe, to follow in the ways that you would call us to. And so, Father, I just pray that the same power that was expressed through the raising of Lazarus, the same power that we have confirmed in communion, would be the thing that guides us in our lives, that makes us the people that you desire for us to be. And so, Father, I just pray that you use this day and our celebration of it to help us to gain an appreciation for who your Son is, all that he accomplished, and all that means for us 2,000 years later. It is in his name that we do pray. Amen.